Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 19th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal, and I'm joined tonight with my special co-host, Jen Swartman from Blind
Hey,
Tiger.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Jen. So you went out to Denver.
I sure did.
And there was this cool thing, a beer drinker of the
Last
year.
Last time I was here was the day before I think we were able to talk to the media, and so I was dying to tell you guys that I had been selected as one of the three finalists for beer drinker of the year this year, but I couldn't talk about it yet, so I just alluded. And I went out there, and good friend Warren Montero, who is one of my regular customers at the Blind Tiger, actually won, and he had participated before. He had lost twice in the finals, so he made a comeback. We were calling him the Susan Lucci, but the victorious Susan Lucci.
Awesome.
And I came in a close second, which I was really proud of. It was a lot of fun.
You are so awesome. And did they invite you back for next year?
They tried to convince me to enter again, but I was like, you know what? That's okay. I've got other things. I'm out there having experiences all the time. So it was just chalk it up to the list.
That's right. You get only one chance with Jen Swartman. I'll tell you that.
I gave him what I got.
And our special guest tonight, we got Yeppe from Evil Twin Brewing. He's back. We love this guy. He's got some great beers. And before we do that, they have a special announcement. There's breaking news in the world of beer. Mississippi has the governor, Phil Bryant, signed into law yesterday. He amended the code so that home brewing is legal in Mississippi. And we have Craig from RaiseYourPint.com on the air. Craig, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Craig, the first thing I did today was check my Twitter, and I saw that you guys had some breaking news. So why don't you tell us what happened and just a little bit about the campaign that you guys have been waging in Mississippi.
Well, it basically late last night, and we got confirmation this morning that the governor did sign a bill. And we've been working about 5 years just trying to get homebrewing legalized in the state. It's been one of our goals. We focus on craft beer issues down here in Mississippi. And this year was finally our year, and we got it done.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
Thank
That's
you.
Exciting.
So the first campaign, you had an issue with the ABV.
And yeah, we had a real low cap at 5 ABW, 6.25 by volume. And, of course, as you can imagine, it was real restrictive as far as what breweries could brew and also good beer that craft beer fans could get into the state. So that was the first thing we tackled, and we got that raised to 10 ABV last year.
All right. Well, congratulations. Do you mind if I read from the – I saw the bill that you guys had posted. It said Senate Bill 2183 from Mississippi Legislature to amend Mississippi Code of 1972 – that's a long time ago, isn't it? To
yep.
provide that every person shall have the right to make homebrew for personal, family, domestic, or household purposes. So that's pretty awesome. Can you just give us, is there a website and a Twitter Twitter that people can check you out on?
Yeah, we're RaiseYourPints.com, and also the Twitter handle is also RaiseYourPints.
All right. Jen, any questions? It's pretty crazy, right? You couldn't make homebrew in Mississippi.
Yeah, now I knew that there were a couple states left where the law was still in place, and so there's one left, right?
Yeah. Yep, it was down to us in Alabama, and they're actually working on legislation right now, too, so
they're
hopefully they'll
closer.
Get theirs done very soon. But,
Fantastic.
Yeah, we were the 49th state.
Cool.
So what do you do down there? What is your establishment? Is it a bar? Is it a...
No, we are a grassroots nonprofit group.
Oh, I
if
see.
You're familiar with, like, years ago in the Carolinas, Pop the Cap, and then Alabama, Free the Hops. We're basically
okay.
an equivalent
you're
organization.
You're the organization that took
All
this up.
All volunteers, nonprofit, and we just lobby to improve the beer laws down here.
Greg, are you a home brewer yourself?
Absolutely. Been doing it about 12 years.
Ooh.
And you like good beer then, too, right?
Oh, I love good beer.
Yeah. Well, Yeppe, you make beer in South Carolina, right?
South Carolina, Charleston.
And what's the brewery that you work with sometimes?
Westbrook. It's actually in Mount Pleasant, just outside of Charleston.
I'm doing a lot of stuff down there, and it's a very good brewery. So yeah. Works out well.
All right.
Yeah.
Craig, any good breweries from Mississippi or down south that we should know about?
Yeah, well, before we got the ABW bill changed, we really only had one production brewery down here. That was Lazy Magnolia.
Yeah.
Now we're on the verge of having five breweries, so it's the boom is about to happen.
All right, man. Well, congratulations. You're welcome to stay on there if you'd like. We're going to continue with our show. And a rock on. Raise your pints, dude.
Thank you.
Good Cheers. Job.
Yeah, it was really the coolest thing. I mean, I don't always like wake up and check my Twitter, but today I did. And it was the breaking news. It was like, wow, they legalized homebrewing. And it seems so crazy that it even has to be legalized. Because I really thought back in 1979, Jimmy Carter made it legal for everybody. But I didn't know that it was state by state.
On a federal level, yeah.
But is it still maximum 10%?
Hey, Craig, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, so I was saying, so I didn't know that. I thought in 1979 when Jimmy Carter legalized homebrewing, I thought that it applied to everybody. Why are there some states that were still lagging behind?
Well, federally they said it's legal, but to really make it legal in the states had to come along behind it and recognize what the federal government did and say, okay, we recognize that we're going to make it legal in the state too. Because it's kind of a thing of, you know, especially alcohol, if it doesn't say it's legal, it's probably illegal. And so that was kind of the case. Just nobody had ever, you know, said to Mississippi, you need to change this. You need to make it say homebrewing's legal. And we're the first ones to come along and
was it just that nobody had asked? I mean, what was the holdup?
Well, it's like I said, nobody had ever went to the legislature and said, hey, you know, we really should do this. And of course, we learned over these couple of years, one individual going up there and asking to get a law change, it's not going to work that way. It takes a grassroots organization, a lot of people calling their senators and their representatives.
We have another special guest. Roger is a beekeeper and he's a homebrewer who makes mead. Roger Ripoll. Roger, do you have a question for Craig down in Mississippi?
Yeah, I wonder if anyone was ever arrested for making home brew prior to this law.
Definitely not in Mississippi, and we've looked, and we can't find any case of it happening nationwide. I mean, we've heard of people being visited by the authorities, but you know, no actual arrests and prosecution.
No fine or nothing.
No, and years ago we talked to the Department of Revenue here in the state because there is some concern, and a lot of people really do have a guilty conscience about it and want to try this hobby, but they were scared to, and so we reached out to them, and, you know, they pretty much told us, you know, as long as you're not selling it or giving it to kids, we've got bigger issues to worry about, so.
Exactly.
So this is just a formality then.
Yeah, it literally was. And last year it's always been a gray area. It never did say it was legal and didn't explicitly say it was illegal. There were other laws that were tied into the whole moonshine thing that could have been construed as, you know, affecting beer production too. But last year we talked to the attorney general down here in state and we said, hey, can you give us a AG's opinion on, you know, whether or not? And he come back and said, well, it's legal if you get the state brewer's license, which is the license you would need if you're going to start a brewery in the state. But that's $1,000, and to get that, you first need a federal license, and of course, you don't need a federal license to homebrew. So it was kind of just a big mess. A mess is kind of what it was. So we just really cleaned it up and said, okay, it's legal.
So, Craig, also, Yepi was going to ask you about the ceiling of 10%. So is that the ceiling for the level of ABV for beer in Mississippi is 10%?
Yeah, it would follow along with that.
So if you brew a 12% beer, it's going to be illegal?
You mean if we brew a 10?
Yeah, like a 10 plus, like a 12% beer?
Yeah, it's all the honor system, so.
So if you feel like the 10% gives you a pretty good ceiling there for other craft breweries.
Well, also, I assume that the 10% affects the beer that's brought in to be sold in bars and things, too. So at least you have 10% because a lot of states, I mean, it's been the last handful of years that even states like Vermont broke their cap and were able to, like, I can't remember what the limit was, but it was definitely like 7% or something like that. That was real normal range. So that's an important thing, too, when it comes to bringing beer into the state.
Well, I think in New York we take it for granted that you can just get all these great beers from all over the world. And Roger, what was your question?
What about home winemaking? Is that still illegal, or was it ever illegal?
Well, actually, in Mississippi, making wine at home has been legal for many, many years. And they never decided to do it for beer, but they did it for wine, and so that one's been there that's been illegal for a while.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, another theme of our show, Craig, is we're gonna talk to some mead makers today, and Roger's actually a beekeeper who makes mead at home, so he's like a home brewer. And many people have said that when they were in college, or the first beer they ever tried to homebrew was a mead. So I don't know. Did you ever make a mead, Craig?
I have not. Not tried mead, but it's on my list to try one day.
Yep, but did you ever make a mead?
Actually, I didn't. No, I'm staying with beer. I know a lot of brewers are experimenting with other stuff like mead and sake and stuff like that, but I like my beer, so I'm going to stay right there.
What about honey beer?
Honey beer, I've had a few on the market, actually. It's two saisons made with honey. I actually have a beer right out right now that's called Honey, I'm Home. which is a song with a lot of honey in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. Are you married, Yuppie?
I'm married. I am.
So, Honey, I'm Home.
Honey, I'm Home.
I like that. So, we're drinking some of your beers, Evil Twin Brewing.
This
so
is a collaboration, right?
This is collaboration with Westbrook, actually, in Fane in Denmark. It's made in Denmark. It's a Berliner Weisse made with Danish blueberries and aged in red wine cask. And it has a really, really, really funny name. It's actually called Justin Blåbær. And blåbær means blueberries in Danish. So.
Oh, nice.
So, Craig, in Mississippi, do they get the Justin Bieber reference?
I didn't catch it, so I don't know.
It's not too big.
You're on the phone line. It's a little different.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what else did you bring today, Yuppie?
I brought another one of my own beers, one that I then can hear is illegal down in Mississippi because it's 12% alcohol. It's called Even More Jesus, which is a big and pale stout, and this one is aged in port wine barrels from Portugal. And I also brought a favorite of mine, not one of my own beers, but from a brewery called Jolly Pumpkin. It's called Lucianaga, which is like a blonde Belgian-style ale with some bread in it. I love it.
You know, I love Jolly Pumpkin.
Me too.
I mean, it's. Yeah. Have you met those guys? Have you met?
I met Ron. I actually distribute Jolly Pumpkin in Europe, so I have a close relationship with those guys, and it's good stuff.
Yeah. How did you ever meet Ron Jeffries?
I don't know. I just before I started brewing and I started my import company, I just went to Michigan and met the guy and told him I wanted to import his beers, and he said yes, and it works out real well.
Cool. Jen, have you ever done a Jolly Pumpkin special at the Blind Tiger or Jolly Pumpkin Night?
Oh, yeah. We definitely have had a series of their beers up, and then as often as we can get our hands on them, we put them on. So, yeah, we see as much Jolly Pumpkin as we have access to.
No, because I feel like a few years ago, it was like Jolly Pumpkin was the coolest thing that you could get. And
it still is for
and
me.
I feel like the last couple of years, I haven't heard as much about it, but I still buy his beers all the time, and I love them.
They were one of the very few, they still are one of the very few breweries where they're making sours constantly, and you can actually access them, you know, because sours are so... time-consuming, and they take up space, and so they're expensive to make and rather difficult to make well. And so, like a lot of our favorite breweries are making them when they can, but it's small little bits and pieces of sour out there. And that brewery really committed themselves to
from the very beginning, that's their whole concept.
Yeah,
I like it. I get asked a lot, if you have to name one favorite brewer. Who would it be? And I always say Jolly Pumpkin. I mean, other people make beer as good, but if you take the whole range of beers that Jolly Pumpkin do, it's just, for me, it's just the most perfect.
They never let you down.
Never let me down. And there's so many different ones. They all have that house flavor because of the barrel aging and the wild yeast and all that. But it's just, it's just so unique and so flavorful and so balanced. I just love it. He's a big fan.
Cheers
of
that. Jeron Jeffries. Yeah. And what's the name of this beer again? The Jesus beer?
Even more cheese.
No, this isn't. No, you're still drinking the sour. I thought you wanted more of that.
What's the other one? The Jesus beer.
We'll get
it's
to that
called
one.
Even More Jesus.
I bet in Mississippi they wouldn't let you call a beer after Jesus.
Probably not.
And it's 12%.
And it's 12%, so we don't even have to.
Hey, Craig, thanks for coming on from Mississippi. Rock on. You guys did a great job at Raise Your Pint. And
cool.
We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right.
Do it.
You're listening to Andy's Biscuits by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're giddy and celebrating that Mississippi approved homebrewing. So we're drinking a lot of beers. We got Yepe from Evil Twin. I'm drinking the Even More Jesus from Yepe. And I don't think they would approve that label in Mississippi.
They'd approve of the beer, though.
But they
beer
would like
is
it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, thank
it's
you.
Really, really good.
And we're here with Roger, who's a beekeeper. And we're going to have Michael from, where is it from? Moonlight Meadery in New Hampshire calling in soon, too. So now we're going to switch over to mead. So for many people, you know, celebrating that Mississippi has legalized homebrewing, many people start homebrewing with mead. I know that
historically, it's one of the oldest fermented things out there, you know.
Maybe the original fermented thing.
And many guys in college,
Middle Ages, they
were able
stuff.
To buy like an old Grolsch bottle that was self-sealing, and they could make their meads and put them in the Grolsch. And, I remember that from college. The first homebrew I ever had was a mead.
How was it?
I don't know, but it wasn't as good as yours. So, Roger, you brought your own homebrewed mead, which we tasted before the show, and it kind of had, the accents of a sake nose?
I said, wow, it actually reminds me of sake, and it was definitely dry. It was, you said, a year old?
Yes, just a year old.
Okay,
usually
so
they age them from 2 to 4 years.
Okay, so it wasn't even on the higher, the long end of that, and yet it fermented out, and I didn't get... I mean, my problem with mead, which is a lot of people's problem with mead, is it ends up too sweet. Mm. There's so much residual sugar. When honey is the base, how can you avoid it? And this one was really dry fermented.
That,
out,
that
so
was,
we should
so
try
was
that
good
one
for
again.
College homebrew. Like,
I don't think Yepi
kind
got
of
to
a honey mead, something that college students would like. And I remember that a long time ago. But what I liked about
Rogers, I don't think that mead is as universal as you think it is, Jimmy. With homebrewers, it's just that happened to be one of the first things you tried, so you got it in your head. Like, everybody starts with honey, but I think a lot of people start with cider because apples, you can get apple juice, and it's simple because you don't have to make a recipe. But the mead thing, I think it's a lot rarer than you're giving it credit for.
Maybe I went to
and
a
yet
cool,
it's coming around.
Cool college.
In Denmark, it's pretty common, actually. We have a pretty good tradition for mead in Denmark, and... we have some very good mead makers. Actually, the biggest one, which is called Danish Mead or Dansk Mjøl, actually export a lot of meads to the U.S. So you can get it over here in 1 liter clay bottles kind of thing. So, yeah, it's popular in Denmark for sure. Another big market for mead, and you wouldn't think of it, is Poland. One of the best mead makers in the world is actually Polish, called Jadwiga. And they're most famous mead is, I think that one is aged for about 8 years before they release it. And it's good. But it's a stronger meat. It's 22% or something.
Huh.
Yeah. I was in Poland this past summer and had the opportunity to taste some of their meads. And
was it different from the mead that we've seen domestically?
They're sweet. They're
sweet.
The ones I tasted were like a kind of a port.
Yeah, more like
meat, something like that.
More like a dessert
wine. Michael Fairbrother from Moonlight Meadery.
Hey, Michael. So Michael's
hey,
on
how are you?
Hey,
Moonlight
welcome.
Meadery in New Hampshire. Michael, I met you last month. You were in New York, and you went to the Homebrew Alley, and some people introduced you. So thanks for coming on, man. So we're tasting some of your meads right now.
I just opened the Desire, which I think might be your flagship.
Yes, it is. It's a blackcurrant, blueberry, black cherry. So it's got some sweetness to it, but it's balanced by the fruits that are added with it.
Michael, how did you get started? How did you get started making mead?
So I started homebrewing back in May of 1995, and by July I was at a party and somebody offered me a sizer. I had no idea what they were offering me, so I said I'd take a sip. Now, have you ever seen a baby make that face when it tries something for the first time and it loves? Well, that was my face when I was 29.
Eyes lit up.
And I said, what is this stuff? And he said, it's an apple mead. I'm like, okay, it doesn't help me. What is mead? And he said, it's a wine made from honey. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I used to be a beekeeper. So I went home and started making it. And by 2006, I was president of the largest homebrew club in New Hampshire, Brew Free or Die. And I realized that when I pulled out a bottle of beer I made, my buddies hung around. But when I pulled out a bottle of mead that I was making, every woman in the room was knocking somebody over to get to me. So we started the company actually in 2007, but didn't start commercial production until 2010. At the 2009 Craft Brewers Conference, I was in, my friends from Sam Adams got me into the conference, and I was talking to Omar from Surly Brewing Company, telling him I was going to start this company right down in my garage, and he changed my life with one sentence. He looked at me and he said, how can you possibly think you can do something you love part-time? And that was the final tipping point. We started working on the business plan, and as of last year, we sold 5,000 cases in 1 year. We've already sold half that this year by February.
Wow.
And we're now in 23 states. We make over 66 varieties of mead. We've got six of them that are available nationwide.
66?
66?
Yeah, I like flavor.
Yeah, you like to play around a little. So you have six that you're in production on year-round?
Yeah, six of them that are we're promising to keep up volume on. So those are the, you know, we have a brand agent, St. Killian. They basically are a middleman between us and a lot of the local distributors. For example, in New York City, I think Beer Union is our distributor. But, you know, it gives me an ability to focus on making it and not have to worry and focus too much on it.
Let me give some background. I've met Michael, and we sat one night, and I think for 2 hours he told me how he did all this. And it's still amazing. I mean, you're just like a go-to guy. I mean, you're up there just pumping out mead.
Yeah, we just got our first 1,000-gallon fermenters. We've got capacity right now to make over 400,000 bottles a year.
Wow!
That's cool.
But I mean, who's buying the mead? I mean, I don't buy that much mead. Honestly, like Roger brought us a nice old school homebrew mead. It's sat for a year, right? Roger, tell us how you made it, because this is the old roots here.
Yeah, the old root. Well, what I was looking for was something that was natural and that it was dry. Most
these are
meads,
dry also from moonlight. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, most meads were kind of cloyingly sweet. So, and I knew this old beekeeper in Yonkers, Norman Bantz, who produced a very dry, not very dry, but kind of like a Chablis type of mead, and it was very flavorful. And he brewed it down in his basement in 30-gallon oil drums, and you know, the recipe was fairly straightforward. So I decided to try it, and but you know, every recipe that I you know, I looked on the internet, I bought books, and every recipe was different. So I didn't know you had to add this different chemicals and so forth. So forget about it. So finally, I turned to YouTube, and I discovered a two-part video, 6 minutes each, about how to make mead by this guy with the moniker Michigan Shooter. And he started out with the music playing Bach's Brandenburg Concertos in the back. So I figured, yeah, this guy could be all right. And so, you know, it was mostly just demonstrating how to do it. And all he used was honey, water, and as a yeast nutrient, which you need to make a mead, he put in a cup of bee pollen.
Mm.
So I did that. And You know, I got pretty much the results that I wanted. So
you know,
this is a natural product.
Talking about bee pollen, I've heard about some brewers who've used, like Sam Colagione used some kind of insect's belly as a yeast. Have you heard about that, Yepy?
It sounds like Sam.
It does. I mean, yeah, everything has yeast on it can pretty much be used. You know, you can use the wild yeast that you do in Belgium.
Like
or
a yeast infection or
yeast
something.
Yeast on grape skins.
There's yeast in the air, there's yeast on everything,
everywhere.
But it's you want certain strains. So if you find strains that actually work, am I right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean
yeah,
there's some yeast you don't want in your beer fermenting it, but there's yeast all over if you know how to propagate it and find it.
I actually have a beer out now called, it's small production, just on kegs. It's called Danbic. I didn't want to, it's not called Lambic because you can only make Lambic in Belgium, but it's actually
Danish,
the spontaneous fermented beer that is made in Denmark. So it's
what do you call it?
Danbic.
Danbic. So that's like, how do you say it in Danish?
Danbic.
Danbic.
Danbic. So yeah, it's a spontaneous fermented beer that we made in Denmark, and you know it's going to be different from the ones you make in Belgium because the yeast is different in the air in Belgium than it is in Denmark. But it came out really good, actually.
So Michael, there's a serious conversation going on here. I mean, do you really get that into your production and stuff, or just have like a formula?
No. It's we
if he's
have
making
to
66
everything
types.
We make has a formula, thanks to the federal government. You know, as I create the formula, I send it off to get basically a rubber stamp, and we can go forward with it. But we are also making a wildly spontaneous fermented mead that we're going to call Curiosity, that we're aging in the Allagash Brewing Company Curio barrels.
Oh, that sounds good.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
Send some to New York.
Yeah, right? And the one we just tasted now, it's the apple pie.
Yeah, the Kurtz apple pie.
It really tastes delicious. Like apple pie.
It's almost 17% alcohol. That's why they're nice small little
it
bottles.
Actually tastes a lot like an apple
yeah.
pie.
I like the 17%.
Good. So it's apples and honey?
Yeah, we dilute the honey with apple cider.
Okay.
And so we get fresh pressed apple cider from right down the street from the winery. And then once the fermentation's complete, we add Madagascar bourbon, vanilla beans, and Vietnamese cinnamon. And let it age till it's ready to bottle and sell.
That's hands down the best mead I've ever had.
It's good.
And I've had mead on me for a while.
I actually had a mead beer collaboration the other day. I visited Cigar City in Tampa, Florida, and they teamed up with, I think it was Bee Nectar Meadery
yeah,
or something.
That.
Yeah, and they did it was kind of like a meets beer kind of thing, and it was absolutely amazing. One of the best beers I've had the last year, I think. It was so good.
Yeah, it's a style called the Braggot, which is a mead made with malt. We can't technically make one as a winery. But, you know, if you're ever looking for somebody to come out to Denmark to partner up with you and make a Braggot, I'd be happy to.
I'm totally ready.
I see. So a meadery is actually under the category of wine.
We can choose between the two.
Okay.
But
okay.
We're kind of in between. But some of the meaderies in the country choose to become breweries because they want to make Braggots. In New Hampshire, it's a heck of a lot more difficult for us to make a quote-unquote beer with no malt or hops. So we chose to go a winery route, which is, you know, a lot easier for us in the state of New Hampshire. But in New York City, for example, mead's considered beer, and that's how it's sold.
Okay.
Michael, are you using any, like, New Hampshire ingredients, like New Hampshire honey? I mean, you're using New Hampshire water, of course.
Yeah, we use an awful lot of New Hampshire water. All the cider we use comes from New Hampshire. We use True Source certified honey. So you'd think I could use honey from New Hampshire, but last year we used over 37,000 pounds. We're expecting to go through close to 60,000 pounds this year. That's more honey than the state of New Hampshire produces. So we buy it through McClure's, which is the largest honey supplier in New Hampshire. They're owned by Pennsylvania Dutch Gold, which is the largest honey supplier on the eastern seaboard. And every batch of honey we have is trackable. We can track it back to the beehives it comes from.
Oh.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of bees to make all that honey.
They're working hard.
Well, Michael, tell us your website, because, you know, we met last month and, you know, you had a great story. And I know you could talk for hours. What's most impressive to me is how you took something that most people think of as an early homebrew project and you've turned it really the first person I've known who has like a national distribution on mead. I mean, is there anyone else distributing mead across the country like you are?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple. You got Bee Nectar. You've got Maine Mead Works.
Redstone.
And
Redstone out of Boulder, Colorado is the one that we tend to serve at the Blind Tiger. I was going to ask you, do you only package it in 750 milliliters?
Most of our packaging is 375 milliliter bottles.
375, yeah. So, okay. Just because, you know, we pour it as a glass of wine, as wine. And so we tend to buy a little bit bigger bottles from Redstone, but I'm curious just because this would be really nice to have. I think I could turn a lot of people on to mead with your mead.
Yeah, I was at Blind Tiger the last time I was in town. Boy, what a great bar that was.
Yeah,
we recommend a 3-ounce pour instead of 4-ounce pours. We actually have glassware. Okay. It's just, you know, our tagline is romance by the glass because, you know, I was going after women as my target customers, and 80% of my customers are female, and they read the names of my meads, and they get pretty excited and say, okay, I could see drinking this stuff. Cool. And, you know, we position the bottle as romantic enough to share. If we were selling it in 750s, people would be falling down pretty close to drunk.
Michael, what's your most popular mead title or flavor?
Yeah, Desire is our bestseller. That's the one you tried with the blackcurrant, blueberry, and black cherry.
First
Kurt's Apple Pie is our second bestseller.
Awesome. Great.
And then
But Yuppie has a question.
I just want to know, do you do draft meats also? Because I know
beans. You know, that was my question too, Yuppie.
I stole it.
Good one.
Yeah, I know we're working real hard to get to draft meats. We're about to sign a lease agreement to increase our footprint by a factor of 5. When we have 20,000 square feet of production space, I'm going to be working nonstop to get a draft line system up and running.
Awesome.
Wow. So when you're we're going to take a break in a minute, but the last question is, when you're making mead and you're growing production, is it like making beer, or is it like making, you know, soup or tea? I mean, what's akin to it when you're doing the scale of production you're aiming towards?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we never pasteurize the honey. The honey comes in raw. We only warm it up to about 80 degrees so that we can lower the viscosity to pump it into a mixing tank. So once it goes into a mixing tank, we add cool water. We blend the honey and water together, usually 25% honey, 75% water. If we're adding juice or fruit, that would go in at that point. And then it ferments at 62 degrees like a beer or a wine would. So we don't have to brew, you know, heat the water up. There's no heating involved. And it's very straightforward. It takes about 3 months from start to finish. So it's a fairly long fermentation process, but that's what gets us really nice high alcohol level without that high fusel notes that you typically might find.
All right. Well, Michael, stay on the line with us. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to This Body by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions. I'll do it again. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. What a show we have tonight. Jen Swerdman, Blind Tiger, Roger, our favorite beekeeper, Yeppe
nice
from
to be
Evil
here.
Twin, and Michael from Moonlight Metering from New Hampshire is on the line, too. You know, I want to say something that's great. We have an awesome sponsor, greatbrewers.com, and recently they've expanded, so it seems like their footprint, greatbrewers.com, is from Boston, you know, Hudson Valley, I don't know, California, Florida. It's really one of the top companies that's distributing craft beer in the country. And many of the brands that we talk about are available through them. And, in fact, it was so great that Yeppe brought the Jolly Pumpkin because it's one of, like, the most misunderstood beers in the craft beer portfolio. But I love it. You know, to me, it's like
I don't think that's true anymore.
Then that's awesome.
No, I think that people have, they're clamoring for sours. They've done their homework, you know, even people in New York, I mean, they're getting into it with such momentum that they know. Although, of course, it's confusing when you have them on a draft list. And the other big trend out there is pumpkin beer.
Pumpkin beer.
So I don't, you know, I don't think that they knew the confusion that they would cause when they called themselves Jolly Pumpkin. But it is something where when I sense when somebody orders a beer and they're ordering it because they see the word pumpkin and they're excited we have pumpkin spice. And I often, even with people who know exactly what they're ordering, and more people do, I just confirm. Now, you know that beer is kind of sour. That's not a pumpkin beer. And and people are very grateful if I've saved them from that mistake. But
yeah, and, you know, they actually, they made their first pumpkin beer a couple of years ago, Jolly Pumpkin. Just, they swore that they would never make a pumpkin beer, but then they actually made it because...
It was more Jolly Pumpkin than pumpkin.
It is, definitely. And it's actually the only pumpkin beer I really like because it doesn't taste like pumpkins. It's kind of weird that we have a brewery called Jolly Pumpkin and they make a pumpkin beer that doesn't taste like pumpkin.
Well, the thing is, so when it's pumpkin beer... So
it's a joke.
Let's talk about making beer. So you can put in pumpkin as what, part of the mash?
Yeah, I mean, I've never done it. I would never do it. I'm not a big fan of pumpkins.
He just said he hates it. So,
but yeah, you can do it in the mash. You can probably, I don't know.
But we'll separate it because putting pumpkin in doesn't mean it tastes... When people think of pumpkin beers, they think of pumpkin spices. Like
pumpkin is a squash, you know?
Yeah,
it's
not
neutral.
The flavors of pumpkin pie.
You know, you have some just plain pumpkin.
So I think that when people say they're making a pumpkin beer, they're really making a pumpkin pie
spice
beer.
Probably the problem.
Most of the time. And sometimes... pulling it off with a little more nuance than other times. Sometimes it's a big glass of, you feel like they just shook pumpkin spice right into it. And I like those beers when they're executed well. I don't hate them. But I do know that like a lot of people start calling these days in the actually late summer. They'll start calling asking if we have pumpkin beer yet. So they're super popular. And so a lot of people put blinders on. But more and more people out in the market know exactly what Jolly Pumpkin is about because sour beers are also very, very beloved and popular. So
we need to taste that beer now.
We should.
Yeah, let's open it.
I can open it.
All right. Michael, you're still on the line, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Michael. So, Michael, tell us about the time when you came down to New York last month. You went to the Homebrew Alley.
We were at Homebrew Alley helping to judge the competition. We were looking to promote our product. And we did a pouring over at Top of Hops in Manhattan on Friday night during a blizzard and actually sold out 3 cases of product.
Top Hops, right, with Ted? Top Hops is a great bottle shop in the Lower East Side, yep. All right.
And we'll be downtown on Thursday night again this week. Nothing currently planned, but we're looking to see if we can promote or get in somewhere and actually maybe come back and visit you, Jimmy.
That's great to have you back. So Roger, you're a beekeeper. We're going to switch this from mead to the roots of mead, which is beekeeping and honey.
Honey, right.
Tell us how you got started, because you're a pretty cool guy.
Where are you located, too?
Yeah, I have my beehives in the South Bronx in a community garden there, Genesis Park Community Garden. I've been keeping bees there since 1999. And that's kind of part of the tradition of beekeeping. My teacher was a Catholic priest who used to be a Trappist monk and was a beekeeper at the Abbey in Massachusetts. And so he taught me everything he taught me a lot, you know. I was his apprentice and he was the bee master. So I've been doing that what is it, 12, 13 years now? 14 years, and it's been remarkably successful. The bees love it there.
I love the idea of a community garden with a beekeeper.
Yeah, so well, that's becoming more and more common now that beekeeping is legal in New York City. It's like Mississippi. You know, I had the bees there for many years when it was illegal, and I didn't even know it was illegal. You know, so but finally they legalized it, and now everybody's gotten into beekeeping.
Because our friends at justfood.org a few years ago, they started having honey swaps and honey tastings of honey made from New York City bees, which was, according to a health department code, technically illegal. And they ran a campaign, and the code was changed, and it was huge. And now there's a great New York City honey scene of you know, local people making bees and all that stuff.
Oh, that's
I'm rambling,
sure.
But the whole point is that from this, you can make mead, and you made an awesome mead. So tell us how you made your mead. Because it's really good. The nose is like sake. It's very dry. It's a one-year-old.
Slightly carbonated. And full disclosure, this was not made with South Bronx honey because, you know, my production level is not large enough to do mead making with it since the
Fair
demand
enough,
is
yeah.
yeah demand is Ooh. Very strong for regular honey in that comes from the Bronx. So the honey I used was from upstate New York, from Tremblay, who has a sales operation in Union Square, and so that's how I.
Right now, we're tasting Roger's honey. Roger, this is awesome honey, man.
Now this is spring honey.
This is
harvested right at the very beginning of June. Well, I do small batch
seasonal.
Small batch harvesting of honey. So during the honey season, which runs from late May, if you're lucky, June, up until September and the beginning of October, I will harvest it as it's ready. And if I can get 60 pounds of honey, 50 pounds or so from the bees, I will take it immediately. So what I get here is kind of boutique honey. This one that you're tasting now is I harvested it in June, and it has the distinct flavor of linden. And there are many Germans who have come to taste this honey and have said, yes, that's linden honey. And it comes from the street trees, the basswood, American basswood trees that line the streets.
So it must have to do, there is a correlation, I'm sure, between what happens to be blooming in that particular month and that, like, early summer or late spring through the summer.
Correct.
Fall,
so it follows the bloom season.
Every type of flower makes a difference for what the honey's going to taste like.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's what are the bees eating, and then the honey's going to reflect that. That's
at that time.
I've never
so Michael,
through,
when you're doing your production, I mean, do you have to? How do you figure out what your honey's going to taste like? Do you kind of know?
Everything changes. So water can change based on mineral content. The honey changes based on time of year it's harvested, where it's harvested from. So I have to be able to taste and adjust my formulas based on that sensory analysis that I do.
So what about blending? Do you blend to make it consistent?
Sometimes when our apple cider, we get apple cider in September, for example, and apple cider in December, you know, the variety of apples change and the tartness can change quite a bit. So we're trying to work towards keeping a very consistent flavor, but it's very craft oriented, which is, you know, you may see some variance from batch to batch.
All right. Michael, listen, thanks for calling in. Moonlight Meadery in New Hampshire. Michael, what's your website?
www.moonlightmeadery.com.
And thank you for doing what you do, and we'll definitely have you on again. A quick shout out. So Yepe from Evil Twin, you've consulted on a really cool new beer bar in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. What's it called?
It's called Thirst.
It's spelled Thirst, but it's pronounced?
Thirst.
Thirst.
It actually
Thirst,
means Thirst. Thirst in Danish. We opened a little over a week ago, actually. So, yeah.
Congratulations on that.
You got
that.
A great team. Thanks you got a guy from DBGB, General Managing. You got a chef from Momofuku. It's kind of crazy and intense, but I was there for the opening night. It was awesome.
Thanks
and my
a lot.
Favorite beer was from the Beechwood from California.
Beechwood Barbecue in California, in Orange County.
And the IPA.
It's a small brew pub, and he's a good friend of ours. And we asked him to send out some beers, and he did.
Well, we didn't get to talk too much about it, but that's one reason he came on the show tonight. Wanted to give you a shout-out. But quickly,
thanks
tell us, you have one thing you have that's probably unique in New York is you have a very special draft system.
Yeah, I mean, we have 21 lines, which is not that unique, but the whole setup is very unique. You know, the draft guy who installed it, Anton, said it was by far the most complex draft system he ever installed. We have something called the flux capacitor, where you can blend CO2 and nitrogen on each line. So you can do like 80-20% or 50-50. So you can pretty much put all beers.
Customize
perfect.
It.
Yeah. And then we also do beers different temperatures and everything. So
how many walk-ins do you have for different temperatures?
We have two walk-ins, but we have two glycol also, so we can like split them up. So we should be able to do four different temperatures. Right now we only do two because we have to tune it all in. But we should be able to do four different and you know, the whole gas plant just makes it really, oh,
great.
Really
they, good. They just opened, and it's definitely worth going to in Greenpoint Tours. And what's the address in Brooklyn?
615 Manhattan Avenue, right by Nassau and Manhattan.
Awesome. And we have one more special call-in guest. Yes, today or yesterday, Mississippi passed a law that homebrewing is legal in Mississippi. We have a special guest now. One last caller. Hi there. Tell us who you are.
I'm Gary Glass, director of the American Home Brewers Association.
And are you psyched about Mississippi?
I am. I am. I've been working on this for several years now, so it's really exciting to see Mississippi finally legalize homebrewing.
Great. Do you want to tell us anything about it, background or anything?
Yeah, sure. Mississippi is, well, with this, when this law goes into effect, it'll actually go into effect July 1st, 2013. They will be the 49th state to legalize homebrewing. So it's a big deal, and the one remaining state would be Alabama, and they also have legislation currently working its way through that would legalize homebrewing. So we might see this year the first year since Prohibition where homebrewing is legal in all 50 states.
Gary, that's great. And Gary, how can people follow you? Do you have a website?
Yes, our website's homebrewersassociation.org.
All right. Well, join us in the toast first. We're going to toast Mississippi for making homebrewing legal.
Skol.
All right, skol. And also one more toast, and you can join in, Gary. Our good friend and former co-host, Ray Dieter, he died in 2011. And today is his birthday. So
cheers to Ray Dieter,
our good friend. And at that, we're gonna sign out. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Brew Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Brew Seal. GoodBrewSeal.com, an association of 41 New York City small, independently owned beer bars. Thanks to Jen, Yeppe, Roger, and Michael, and now Gary, and also Craig from Raise Your Pint for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Bree O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga, back from South by Southwest. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.